Okay, let's go. 10 minutes.
Hello, everyone. This is Susan Locke with WFYL. We are very pleased and honored to be here today with Senator Rick Santorum. And we thank you, Rick, so much for agreeing to have an interview with us this afternoon. Carla Dedesi is here with me. And we congratulate you on your new book, on the film company Echo Light, the wonderful movie at Christmas time, the wonderful work you're doing. We would like to hear some more from you about it to share with our listeners in the Philly area.
And I just want to applaud you, Senator, for doing such a remarkable job, and we pray that we see you in the White House in the future.
I gave it a try once before, and we'll see whether it's going to happen again. We're certainly seriously looking at it. And Susan mentioned we have a book coming out at the end of April. April 28th is the publication date. It's called Blue Collar Conservative, Recommitting to an America That Works. And really is a focus on trying to reach out to people that I don't think either party is really addressing and talking to. And those are, you know, the 70% of Americans who aren't going to go to college, who are worried about their financial future. They're worried about their families and being able to live the American dream. And I think the response that they've seen from Democrats has been, well, we'll give you money. We'll get you all these welfare programs and benefits and this and that. And as we've seen with Obamacare, it's a trap. It because of these subsidies, it traps people into not making more money, because the more money you make, the benefits go away, and it becomes an economic hardship to get through that transition time. And so it's they say, well, you know, freeing people up so they don't have to work, as if work is a bad thing. Work is the only way that you succeed in America. You know, if you're toward the bottom of the economic ladder, you got to work your way up. And you know, everybody who succeeds does that in one way or the other. And it's a good thing. It's a satisfying thing. And mm-hmm. And we should celebrate that. We should not look down our nose at any particular job, and celebrate everybody for doing their part and pitching in and providing a path forward. And that's what I don't think Republicans have done a good job, because they look at our party and they say, ah, these folks don't talk about us.
Well, and Senator, we do have the highest rate of unemployment right now. And I think that you're hitting on something that we talk about in the studio a lot, which is that work is a very positive and a very good thing. And it's not loving to keep generations down by giving them chronic handouts. I used to work in the city of Philadelphia for Penn, and I went into the projects quite often to give therapy there. And I want to switch a little bit and talk about Obamacare. Mm-hmm. We call it Obamascare. We also call it the Unaffordable Care Act. When I worked at Penn, I treated a lot of patients who had medical assistance, and they received free care. We've always had free care in this country. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's really a sad situation. President Obama went around and said people don't get health care. That's simply not true. Every American under law mm-hmm. is required to have access to care. If you walk into a hospital, you get care. They don't ask. They may ask you for your insurance card, but if you don't have one, they don't turn you out there and say, sorry, we can't help you. Everybody gets care when they need care. And the idea that we are throwing out a system that has the most progressive and excellent quality of medical care in exchange for everybody having health insurance. And as we've seen with Obamacare, not everybody is getting health insurance, far from it. But the promise is everybody gets health insurance. But that doesn't mean everybody gets health care. In fact, by putting you in an insurance policy and by giving you a card, you basically are going to put people into lines, because that's the only way you control cost. If everybody gets free health care, then the only way you're going to ration healthcare is by creating long lines and waits and lack access to care. And that's what you're going to see happen. These exchanges that people are buying, these exchange products, they're going to find that the doctor that they used to go to isn't going to be covered, that the hospital that they're normally go to. Well, what does that mean? That means more people in a very small network of hospitals and doctors. Well, what's going to happen? Well, if you have a lot of people and a limited number of hospitals and doctors, that means people are going to wait. I mean, it's going to be a delay in getting care. So you can have health insurance, That doesn't mean you have health care.
Correct. And I studied in England for 3 months, and that's exactly what we saw. If you were 60 and under, you did receive a hip replacement. But if you were 60 and older, you just did not get it.
Yeah, the difference between a system where the private sector, the market, is paying for this, you are paying for it, and the government's paying for it. If the government is controlling everything, including the hospitals and doctors, and limit and rationing their pay and telling them what they're going to, then when you walk into the hospital, you're no longer, as you were in America, a place for the hospital to make a profit. Now you're a place that's a cost for the doctor. It's mm-hmm. a cost for the hospital. And so what does that mean? They're only going to get so much money. And so you're now a cost. And so they're going to say, well, wait a minute. I need to limit their care because it's coming out of my hide. And that's the problem with socialized medicine. It turns the doctor in the hospital from an advocate for your care to a budgeteer who's trying to limit the amount of care that they're giving to you.
And let's talk about all of the excellent doctors that we're going to lose, because we're always going to have private payers. So they're going to go to this concierge-type doctoring, which you also see in Canada and England.
It's exactly what happens. We're seeing it already where doctors are refusing insurance. They're not taking Medicaid. They're not taking Medicare patients, and they're only taking private pay. When I say private pay, in some cases, it's not even private insurance. They're just taking cash. And we're going to have a two-tiered system. The best and the brightest, if you will, many of them, not all of them clearly, but many of them are going to say, look, I don't want to hassle with the federal government telling me how to practice medicine, how much I have to spend, who I give care to, and how much care I give. I want to practice medicine in a way that I know is best in the best interest of quality care for the patient. And so they're going their own way. And so you're going to have more people in the system with insurance cards and fewer doctors taking care of them. That means less care.
And we could talk about this for hours, but could we talk about Common Core for a little bit?
Sure.
Is that okay? Okay, so Common Core we know is – Common Core is to education what Obamacare is to the health system. It's just an absolute debacle. They don't have any statistics that are backing up what they are doing with our children. Our children are guinea pigs. So can you explain to us why this is so ineffective for our children who are the future of America?
Yeah, I would say the problem I have with Common Core is that it goes against what we know makes the best educational environment for children. What makes the best educational environment for children is parents fully engaged in the education of their children, including what their children are learning. And when you have a federal or state dictated curriculum and standards, then you're removing the parents from their ability to get the kind of education that they believe is in the best interest of your children. And that's the fundamental problem with all of not just Common Core, but with a variety of mandates and edicts that are coming down from the federal government or from the state government on education. There's nothing that shows that these types of one size fits all approaches to educating students is at all beneficial to children across the board. There may be some who do well, but you know what? I have 7 children. Each one of them learn differently. Each one of them need different environments, different. And parents know that. Unfortunately, look, I admit some parents don't do a very good job of that, but we can't design a system for bad parents. We have to design a system that encourages parents to be their best and to get their best out of their children.
And we know as homeschoolers that we do score 15 to 20% higher on standardized tests across the nation, which is supporting exactly what you're telling us, which is parents need to be involved, not the government.
Yeah, and it's not just scores, but you go and meet some homeschooling kids and you find out how well they interact and socialize with people and how the degree of sophistication they have in communications and work skills and ethics. And, education isn't just about books. Education is about all aspects of the human person. And the human person just isn't knowledge. It's also, spiritual. It's also moral. It's also ethical. Mm-hmm. It's citizenship and patriotism. All of those things should be taught in one way or another through the education system. And the problem with Common Core and a lot of these other things is they simply just focus on one narrow aspect of a child's education. And that is why we get, a lot of folks who are ill-prepared for the world that greets them when they leave high school.
Could we talk a little bit about how this administration is pursuing secularism, which I believe is atheism, and they're trying to get Christianity or Judeo-Christian principles out of everything, the public school, television. They're trying to stomp on our rights in this way. And in reality, isn't atheism and secularism a religion just like Christianity is?
It's clearly a set of principles and a worldview. It's not based on any biblical text or any kind of religious text. It may be. There may be some – in some cases, there may be – scientism, materialism. There's all sorts of isms that it could be based on. But the bottom line is, it's a worldview. It's a set of principles and values, just like Judeo-Christian values. But they think because it's not based in the biblical tradition, they're exempt from having any of their ideas being kept out of the public square. Only Judeo-Christian ideas have to be kept out of the public square, and you can't teach the Bible. You can teach Darwinism, mm-hmm. which is clearly in many respects a call for atheism. That's okay, but you can't teach the Bible. And the amazing thing there is, the Bible is the foundational book of Western civilization. Mm-hmm. Western civilization doesn't exist. America doesn't exist, mm-hmm. but for Jesus Christ and the Bible. And the mm-hmm. fact that we aren't taught that, and that this book, which is so central to the understanding of Western civilization, is deleted from the curriculum is also, to me, it's not just the free exercise of religion that's being limited, but it's also intellectual freedom.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for spending time with us. Susan, would you like to add anything?
I would like to ask how you came to develop the Echo Light Company. What was the process? And just describe it for us and what's happening with that.
Yeah, Echo Light Studios is a movie production and distribution company, and I took over the company in June of last year and have been running it ever since. And we make faith and family-oriented films. We had a film out Christmas time called The Christmas Candle, which hopefully you will look for this Christmas when it comes out on DVD and TV. Just the last few weeks, we've had a movie out on the Hallmark Movie Channel called The Redemption of Henry Myers, which I encourage everybody to take a look at. It's a wonderful film. It's gotten really great reviews and good viewership on Hallmark Movie Channel. And it's the Hallmark Movie Channel, not the Hallmark Channel. So don't go to the Hallmark Channel. You won't find it. It's the Hallmark Movie Channel. There's two channels. But we're committed to making films about faith and the importance of the role of faith in people's lives. And we're excited about the opportunity to go out there with good theatrical quality movies, either to put them out through television. In many cases, we're going to put them out through the church. One of the things we're really excited about is the idea of bringing movies and doing a big theatrical release, not in theaters, but in 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 churches across America. So we want to bring the church into the culture, because the church has been, unfortunately, remarkably absent from the culture and the fight for the culture. And movies are the number one most influential thing in the culture. And so marrying the church and film, I think, could be a powerful tool to help the church as well as help many people within the church.
That's a great idea. It's a great idea.
Thank you.
We want to thank you and Karen and your family for all you have done and are doing. We know it's a sacrifice for the family, but we really appreciate it, and thank you for your time with us today.
God bless you.
Thank you.